counsel. Thank you.
Excuse me. Thank you. May it please the court. My name is James Tanford. I have asked for 3 minutes to reserve for rebuttal.
Just watch your clock.
And I apologize in advance in case I ask for a question to be repeated. I have mild hearing loss, but only very mild. I'll be anyway. There are two divergent lines of cases on restrictions on interstate alcohol shipping, one for direct shipping by producers and a different one for direct shipping by online retailers. The district court applied the wrong one. It applied the standards for laws that regulate online retailers, but this case concerns producers. Under the standards set by producers, Washington's ban is unconstitutional. Both lines start from the same premise, that the state power to regulate alcohol is limited by the non-discrimination principle of the Commerce Clause, but they diverge on how to apply it. The cases addressing shipping by producers follow Granholm v. Heald, the Supreme Court's only producer case, and they apply the non-discrimination principle fairly strictly.
As I understand it, the government's main response to that is that the in-state producers who ship have to comply with retailer regulations. So they're essentially being regulated as retailers.
Well, the two lines of cases don't differ based on whether the product is being sold to a consumer, which is their argument. They differ based on who is selling it. Granholm concerned sales and shipping to consumers by wine producers, and that's the same thing here. It is Washington itself calls the shipping privilege for producers, distillery producers, a privilege in section 2410. It says it's a privilege given to producers. Washington doesn't count this as a retailer. It's entirely different sections of the Washington Liquor Code. And even Davy Henry, the leading case, at least in this circuit, on shipping by online retailers, at page 966, distinguishes shipping by online retailers from the cases that involve an exception to the three-tier system, which is shipping by producers. The reason is Washington requires all of its retailers to be located in the state. They have no such requirement for producers. Most of their producers are not located in the state. There's bourbon in Kentucky. They're importing scotch. They're importing all sorts of alcohol. So they've never, in fact, required producers to be located in state. So the assumption that you can, that therefore an in-state presence requirement is now suddenly required because it's a sale to a consumer, is inconsistent with the cases. If Washington wanted to prohibit producers, distillers, wineries, if they wanted to prohibit them from selling to consumers on the grounds that all sales have to take place in Washington, they could do so, but they don't.
I'm not sure that I followed your answer entirely because, as I understand Washington law, and this may be repeating Judge Berzon's question, but as I understand it, a distillery under Washington law must follow the laws relating to retailers. So in essence, they are acting as retailers, and retailers have to be open for inspection. So why doesn't that mean that there has to be someone physically present, regardless of whether it's an in-state or an out-of-state producer?
If I understand your question, first of all, Washington doesn't say it. There are like 600 provisions in the Washington Liquor Code.
Right.
And the ones that directly govern shipping by distillers says that an in-state distillery which is subject to entirely different regulations than a retailer. Simplest example, if you were going to follow all the requirements of retailers, you would have to have a minimum of 10,000 square feet of floor space and a substantial inventory.
Well, what do you make of 66.24140 and 66.24640, which seems to require a distillery to follow all the laws relating to retailers? I mean, it collapses the tripartite selling.
I guess if reading the code as a whole, that would appear to be, even if that, assuming argument that is in fact the correct reading, they themselves would say one needs to read the code as a whole, and there are a lot of differences in the regulation between retailers and those. Even if so, that wouldn't solve the problem about whether this is drafting semantics that continues to create the discrimination. The point is that an in-state distiller who is not a retailer does not have to have the inventory, does not have to buy its products from Washington distributor, does not have to follow the rules, in fact, of an in-state retailer.
Well, the reason it seems to matter is that if they are essentially having to operate as retailers, then they controls.
Well, but Day itself says it does not. It says it does not.
Well, it doesn't concern the Washington law. It doesn't have anything to do with the Washington law. But my point, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, if Washington law, unlike Arizona law, treats in-state and out-of-state distilleries who want to sell as if they are retailers, that they have to follow all the same rules, then Day, which concerns retailers, would seem to apply.
Well, in Granholm, the same issue was raised, not quite as explicitly, and Granholm said that it had a long section on the fact that it was either New York was making the argument that its wineries had to comply with New York's three-tier system, had to comply with all sorts of New York regulations. And they said that does not resolve the question of discrimination. Indeed, the Supreme Court has said repeatedly that one cannot accomplish indirectly that which one is prohibited from doing directly. And the bottom line is a distiller, a craft distiller, located within Washington is exempt from the three-tier system and can sell its products directly to consumers, bypassing wholesalers and retailers.
Only if it follows the retailer. I mean, we're kind of going round and round, I think.
Retailers are required to buy their product. They're prohibited from manufacturing. They're required to buy their product.
What you're saying, in essence, is that it's the three-tier system that was insulated by the Day case, and by definition, this is eliminating the three-tier system. You're cutting out a tier entirely. In other words, when you say that the in-state producers can sell if they act as retailers, then the whole notion of the three-tier system, which is that there are supposed to be three tiers that are insulated from each other, disappears because they're acting. There's one entity which is acting as the producer and the retailer, and isn't, then there is no distributor. That's essentially the problem here.
That is exactly the problem. And that was addressed in Davy Henry, and is addressed in all the other cases upholding restrictions. They haven't all. They've split on that issue, including the circuit. But those cases that uphold the retailer restrictions have been very careful to distinguish that retail sales are inherently part of the three-tier system, a producer to a wholesaler to a retailer, and the retailer sells to consumers.
And this was all, the origin of all this was some notion of that of not creating economic incentives for promoting more sales. I didn't really understand it very well, but there's a reason, a historical reason, why it was thought to be important to have insulated tiers.
That's right. And I'm not here to argue for or against the three-tier system, but to say that, for example, Granholm talked about this as well. It said it is, apart from the retailer requirement, but, you know, that this looks in some ways like a retail sale. In every case where a producer sells directly to consumer, it looks like a retail sale. But what they said was, apart from that, to require out-of-state producers to go through the three-tier system, but exempt in-state producers from going through the three-tier system, is itself discrimination against interstate commerce and not justified without evidence that this is somehow reasonably necessary to protect public health and safety, and that non-discriminatory alternatives, reasonable ones, would be ineffective. Washington already allows out-of-state wineries, those producers, to ship and to sell and ship directly to consumers. They've been doing that for years, and there haven't been any problems.
What about all the concerns about the out-of-state producers not being able to be inspected, sending things, evading taxes, sending products to underage people, and so on? Is there a licensing scheme they could produce in the alternative that would take care of those problems?
Sure, the same one they use, whatever they use for out-of-state wineries, and allow them to ship their products to consumers. Use the same system. It is a system that involves, you have to get a permit, you have to do age verification, you have to report your sales to the state, you have to file taxes and pay taxes, and you have to use a common carrier approved by the state. So that it, in other words, there's no evidence at all in this case. First of all, there are like 44 states now that allow interstate shipping of alcohol from producers at some level. None has repealed those statutes. There's no evidence that this is causing any public health and safety problems. There's no evidence that they aren't paying taxes. What you have from the state is a couple of state administrators being afraid that in the future problems might arise that haven't arisen anywhere else. And that's not consistent with the concrete evidence standard in Granholm. It is not consistent with the statement, the holding in Tennessee Wine. That
Counsel, do you want to reserve your time?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Good morning. Jeremy Gelms representing the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board. Davey Henry is dispositive. Like Day, Washington's physical presence requirement for those selling spirits directly to consumers is an essential feature of the state's three-tier spirit system.
Well, but you don't have a three-tier system. That's the part I don't understand. If you're allowing producers to sell as if they're retailers, then there aren't three tiers anymore.
There are three tiers, Your Honors, because as Judge Graber pointed out, there is two specific Washington laws that explicitly require any distiller who wishes to act as a retailer to be regulated and subject to the wholesaler.
I thought the whole point of the three-tier system historically, as it's been approved by the U.S. Supreme Court and by this court, is, I admit to not understanding it very well, but some notion that by insulating three different tiers and not allowing them to interact with each other except in this formal process, there is less incentive for various manipulations to sell more liquor or whatever. But it's what's been approved. This is not that. It's the opposite of that.
I disagree that it's the opposite, Your Honor, because those same interests that you have elicited that have been recognized are protected by Washington's system because the distiller, when they're acting as a retailer, are still subject to wholesaler and retailer laws. They can't just get a pick whatever laws and regulations that they want to choose and have basically a collapsed system. No, like every other entity that wants to sell directly to consumers, they are still subject to wholesaler and retailer laws.
First of all, they're not subject to wholesaler laws. They're subject to retailer laws, right?
No, that's incorrect. Subsection, which Judge Graber pointed out, 6624640, says when you are going to act in the capacity as a wholesaler or retailer, you're subject to wholesaler and retailer laws. It also specifically says in subsection 6624-1402, if you are a distiller, and that's where it provides the privileges for you to sell directly to consumers, you are acting as a retailer, and you're going to be regulated as a retailer. So it's not a collapsing of the system. Each one of those tiers is still in place. And I'd note neither of those statutory provisions that I referenced are cited by counsel, and that omission is telling because that's what makes this case like day, because they're acting and regulated as a retailer. Conversely, when you are an entity such as Shady Knoll without a physical presence, you avoid being regulated at the wholesaler and retailer tier because Washington can't conduct oversight of an entity in New York. It just can't. So removing that physical presence requirement knocks out two legs of a three-legged stool because it allows the state no ability to enforce distributor and retailer requirements. And that is what fundamentally makes this case exactly like day. And the uncontested facts in this case, and I will reiterate that, the facts are uncontested. There was no submission of a material facts in dispute. And what those facts show is that the physical presence provides the state with the ability to conduct unannounced inspections, compliance buys, check labeling, and importantly here, the opportunity if an entity fails to pay taxes or violates the law to physically go on that premises and seize and confiscate spirits products. Again, the state cannot do that with an entity in New York where it doesn't have a physical presence in the state. And as this court also noted in Day in footnote 5, if the state tried to implement and enforce those Washington state wholesaler and retailer requirements on an entity out of state, there would be a host of practical and legal issues, for example, under the extraterritorial doctrine, because the state would have the practical effect of controlling commerce out of state. This is an essential feature of the system. But separately, aside from that, besides being per se valid, Washington again submitted unrebutted evidence of the public health and safety benefits. And you heard in briefing and here today two sort of broad categorizations and responses to that, and I want to talk about each one of those briefly. First, there's the argument that they aren't challenging the admissibility, they're only challenging the weight of the evidence. And I think that mischaracterizes Shady Knoll's own argument, because in page 43 of their opening brief, they challenge some of the state's evidence on speculation grounds and some of it on lack of foundation grounds. That is a challenge to the admissibility of evidence. It's not a challenge to weight.
One kind of evidence that's absent from the record is, I mean, you say in general that you enforce the retail regulations, but there's no evidence really of how the retail regulations are enforced against with regard to producers who are selling directly to consumers. And one sort of wonders why that is any different from out-of-state producers selling directly to consumers through the internet, particularly, or by mail, because there's, all the problems of shipping to underage people and so on would seem to be the same, and we have no idea what kind of regulation is going on with regard to that.
Well, I would note, Your Honor, that the only regulation, the wholesaler and retail regulation that Shady Knoll challenges is the physical presence requirement. And the state did submit unrebutted evidence supporting the basis of the physical presence requirement.
Right, but what I'm saying is, how does the physical presence requirement help to enforce the rules when you're dealing with internet sales, which is really what we're talking about here?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we talked about and what the undisputed evidence shows is that the physical presence requirement, well, Shady Knoll's sale, I'm sorry, the direct shipment of Shady Knoll's liquor into Washington State perfectly exemplifies
the problem is that you don't have any way, you do have a system for licensing and regulating out-of-state wine producers who are selling into the state, but you don't have one for spirits, and so there's nothing applicable to them. But if something were applicable to them, i.e. parallel to the wine regulations, as a practical matter, would that differ in its enforceability from what is actually done? Because this is where there's no record with regard to in-state producers selling via the internet.
Two responses to that, Your Honor. Any comparison between Washington's regulation of wine and spirits is a constitutional red herring. Washington
No, I'm not comparing. I'm saying that you do have a way. You do have some regulations that apply to the wine producers. You have none because you don't allow it with regard to the distillers. And if you had some kind of regulation of them, would it actually differ from how on the ground the system works with regard to in-state distillers selling indirectly, selling, you know, not at their location?
It would make a difference because Washington has made the determination to not have a three-tier system for wine. There is no three-tier system for wine.
But that's not what I'm asking you.
Well, so I'm saying yes, the on-the-ground realities are different. For example, in wine, a producer can directly sell to an individual, and they are not subject to any wholesaler or retailer requirements.
I think the question is, if I understand it correctly, why wouldn't Washington have to treat distillers like it treats wineries?
Why doesn't it have to?
Right.
For two reasons. First, the 21st Amendment itself. It provides states the leeway to determine what public health and safety measures its citizens deem appropriate. And the state has determined we don't need a three-tier system for wine. Historically and continuing to this day, we have a three-tier system for spirits. And that makes sense because the undisputed record shows that these are materially different products. Spirits relative to wine have higher consumption rates, higher intoxication levels.
I really was not saying that you have to treat them that way. I'm saying if you treated them that way, you would account for at least some of the problems that you're asserting occurred with regard to Shady Knoll, for example.
Some, but not all, Your Honor.
And so then, if that's the case, as a practical matter, do those same residual problems still exist with regard to in-state producers as a practical matter with regard to interstate sales? Because, for example, the inspections that you're talking about with regard to underage sales, how are you inspecting for interstate sales if it's being delivered to somebody's house? You have, as I understand it, the wine regs do a little with that because they do require a signature by an adult. So you could say that the problem with now is you have no regulation that applies to out-of-state spirit sales. So the fact that the Shady Knoll sales went awry is no wonder, because there's absolutely nothing that applies to it. But so I'm just using the wine regulations as an analogy, not trying to say that you have to do the same as the wine thing. I'm saying if you had those or something like them, would you account as a practical matter for most of the differences between the out-of-state and in-state producers selling to consumers through internet sales?
No, because here's why. The state regulates spirits differently from wine. So, for example,
I know it does. Let's forget about the wine. If you had A, B, and C regulation, and they happen to be the ones you have for wine, but I'm just talking about A, B, and C. I'm not talking about the wine part of it, okay? Yeah. If you had those regulations, you would account for at least some of the problems. And I don't care about the fact that they're now applicable to wine. I just care about the fact that they exist.
Some, but not all, Your Honor. For example, at the wholesaler level, there are prohibitions against liquor giveaways and kickbacks, against promotional items, against money advances. All of those would apply to a distillery selling directly to consumer. There's regulations.
And why couldn't they apply to out-of-state people?
I'm sorry, why don't they
apply? Why couldn't they?
Well, because every state's wholesaler and retailer regulations are different. Some states don't have those requirements. Washington does.
But why couldn't Washington say that a producer who's going to sell to consumers in Washington can't have a certain kind of promotion?
Because as the state recognized in Day at footnote 5, there would be a whole bunch of legal and practical implications from that.
Well, that's true when you're talking about retailers on site selling to people. But when you're talking about what's going on over the internet, that seems different.
Well, Washington couldn't impose, for example, under the extraterritorial doctrine that this court noted in Day, couldn't impose its unique wholesaler requirements on an entity out of state without a physical presence. It couldn't. It would run into to legal challenges there. And so, for example, what they have done with wine, and I know you don't want to bring your wine, is just said, okay, well, we're just not going to impose those requirements. That's the decision that we've made for wine. We haven't made that decision for spirits. So Washington,
but you don't apply the wholesaler regulations to producers selling as retailers.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't
catch that. You don't apply the wholesaler regulations to producers selling directly.
We do, Your Honor.
You do if they're distributing, but not if they're just selling those retailers.
So any entity that sells directly to consumers under Washington law is required to comply with wholesaler and retailer requirements.
No, that's not what the regulation says. As I understand it, it says if you're going to act as a distributor, if a producer is going to act as a distributor, then you have to comply with the wholesale, with the distributor regulations. And if you're going to act as a retailer, you have to comply with the retailer regulations. But it doesn't say that if you're acting as a retailer, you also have to comply with the wholesaler regulations.
Well, that's correct. But in order for it to go to the retailer level, it had to stay within the regulations of the three-tier system. And so it applied the laws of the wholesaler level. So if an entity is just engaged, a non-producer, and is just a retailer, that alcohol already came from the producer and the wholesaler and was subject to state producer.
Yes, but if the producers are selling their own products, there is no wholesaler. Other than themselves.
There is no separate wholesaler entity, Your Honor.
And there's no requirement that they also comply with wholesaler regulations.
There is, Your Honor.
I do not read that rule that way.
Just quickly, Your Honor, that's RCW 6624640.
Right, and I'm reading it, and it doesn't say that.
Okay.
It says if you're going to be a distributor, if you're going to act as a distributor of spirits, then you have to. You can import from outside the state, but it doesn't say that if you're just distributing your own product, you have to cover to yourself that you have to comply with distributor. It doesn't say that.
And then, Your Honor, also subsection 6624140(2A). I see that my time is up. We ask that the district court affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I just have a few points because I think both sides' arguments are clearly set out in their briefs. One is to point out that the reference that they have to Section 6624.10, which was cited earlier, saying they had to act as retailers, it has 13 sections to it, and no section actually makes that explicit requirement. I understand that they think that it is implicit from the whole system, but it does not actually say that. And there are plenty of other statutes, as has been pointed out, applying to retailers that don't apply. What they have to do is be in the same situation, be similarly situated to in-state distributors, and they are. They made several things. First of all, just to correct one thing, they argued that the illegal shipment of a Shady Knoll product was shipped by Shady Knoll. It was not. The record clearly shows it was shipped by an intermediate retailer to whom Shady Knoll, who was carrying Shady Knoll products. So it's neither here nor there. And in terms of their sort of uncontested facts, we agree the facts are largely uncontested. They had lots of people to talk about what they have the ability to inspect, not that those inspections accomplish anything. They say there's a potential for various kinds of problems with the system if you allow direct shipping. They have no evidence any of those are actual. And Tennessee Wine and Granholm repeatedly say that the evidence required is evidence of an actual public health and safety problem that could not be dealt with by reasonable non-discriminatory means, which in this case is by using the same system of licenses, protections, regulations, and oversight that they do for wineries. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. This matter is submitted.